DW Africa Link.
It's Thursday, the 20th of June. It's a pleasure to welcome you to another edition of the Africa Link program. I am Eddie Micah Jr.
And I'm Zipporah Nyambura. We welcome you all to engage on the stories via our Facebook page, DW Africa.
Coming up in the next 15 minutes, as we mark World Refugee Day, most refugees and asylum seekers have no option but to bribe their way into South Africa.
Officials was like pushing me like to talk nice. I cannot do anything wrong, like to bribe. So I have to wait with my family until half past three.
Plus, Uganda's refugee policy has been hailed as an example for the world to emulate, but it is still faced with many challenges, and some refugees are planning to protest to get their issues addressed.
We want to demonstrate because we are looking at the police as being highly used by people in power in order to oppress vocal refugees who can speak on behalf of the others.
Do stay tuned for the details and more stories right after the news in brief.
DW News.
And my name is Jane Nyingi. The U.S. military has confirmed that Iran has shot down one of its drones. It says the drone was in international airspace at the time, but Iran military commander Hussein Salami said they targeted the unmanned aircraft because it was violating Iranian airspace.
We don't have the intention to go to war with any country, but we are fully prepared for war. An enemy that violates our borders will be destroyed. The only way our enemies can stay safe is for them to respect the territorial integrity, national interest, and national security of the great Iranian nation.
The incident comes at a time of heightened tensions between the U.S. and Tehran. A Turkish court has sentenced to life imprisonment 151 people accused of a failed military coup in 2016. Among them is former Air Force commander and President Tayyip Erdogan's former aide. Turkey's defense ministry lawyer, Oguz Atin Kenyak, who was in court during the ruling, said the decision was an important step for Turkey's judiciary.
Some of the conventions were materially appropriate, but there are decisions that we will appeal and take to an appeal court, especially certain acquittals and other sentences. We will appeal once the detailed justification is sent to us, but generally, Turkish judiciary has passed an important test.
At least 250 people were killed across Turkey, many of them unarmed civilians, when military personnel attempted to topple President Erdogan's government. Still in court, four human traffickers have been sentenced to life imprisonment by a Hungarian court for the deaths of 71 migrants 3 years ago. The decomposing bodies were found cramped inside a truck dumped on a highway in Austria. In a final ruling, the judge said three of the traffickers would have no possibility of parole, while the fourth would serve a minimum of 30 years in prison. This news comes to you from DW in Bonn, Germany. As the world celebrates World Refugee Day today, the UN High Commissioner for Refugees, Filippo Grandi, has said political solutions to conflicts are difficult because the world has become very divided and unable to make peace. Speaking to reporters in the German capital Berlin, Grandi revealed that over 70 million people were forcibly evicted from their homes in 2018, the highest in 70 years.
One key factor pushing people out of their homes is conflict, is crisis. And which all of which require political solutions, and those political solutions are difficult because the world has become very divided and unable to make peace. If the problem remains, it is a problem for us all. So rejection, pushing back, building walls does not solve the problem.
Two-thirds of all refugees still come from just five countries, namely Syria, Afghanistan, South Sudan, Myanmar, and Somalia. And now to sports, FIFA Secretary General Fatma Samora has been appointed General Delegate for Africa for 6 months starting August 1st as part of ongoing reforms within African football's governing body. The Confederation of African Football, CAF, and its president, Ahmad Ahmad, have been in the spotlight after recent governance issues. For more news and information, head on to our Facebook page, DW Africa. My name is Jane Nyingi.
This is DW's Africa Link, coming to you live from our studios in Bonn, Germany. My name is Ipora Nyambura.
And I am Eddie Micah Jr. Join the debate on the issues we are discussing on our Facebook page, DW Africa. Talking about our Facebook page, Joel Good is live from Liberia. You tuned in. Also, Ishmael Hongi live from Cameroon. Precious Tutu. Also, you guys are welcome to the show.
And we start off with the big story of the day. As the world marks Refugee Day, South Africa's refugee system is faced with corruption charges. Refugees and asylum seekers in the country say the situation has cast a dark shadow on the whole purpose of granting asylum to desperate seekers.
Now, according to the United Nations High Commission for Refugees record in 2017, South Africa had over 200,000 refugees and asylum seekers, but the country still has a backlog of 150,000 unprocessed appeals from denied applications. A case of if you can't pay, you can't get in. Thuso Kumalo reports from Johannesburg.
51-year-old Democratic Republic of Congo, DRC national, Bazolaiko Adrian Swamba, left his country over 10 years ago. He says it was not out of choice.
I fled the persecution back home because the country politically is not going right. I ran here to look for legal protection here in South Africa.
But that protection came with numerous other challenges. Like hundreds of other refugees, he had to stand in long queues for days to get an asylum permit and refugee permit. He still cannot forget how he, his wife, and their three children were at one time ignored by the officials for 9 hours for refusing to pay a bribe.
I went there and officials was like pushing me like to talk nice. But as a paralegal advisor, I cannot do anything wrong, like to bribe. So I have to wait with my family until 3:30. Then they ran our service. They were almost closing.
Democratic Alliance Party official Hanif Hussein says this has had a devastating effect to refugee applicants.
What's happening now is that because of this corruption and because of the inefficiencies in Home Affairs, you are finding that hundreds and thousands of applicants are walking around in the country undocumented.
But why are these refugees not reporting the officials to higher authorities?
They said that bring the proof that the official has taken money. But which proof can you bring? Because it's 101 when you are bribing.
The Department of Home Affairs admits there have been numerous reports of corruption and says steps have been taken to curb it at the biggest refugee center in Pretoria. Tulani Mavuso is the department's acting director general.
That we do not deny. That is why we installed an automated system where people can renew their asylum seeker permit without interfering or seeing an official.
But for Swamba and thousands other refugees and asylum seekers, this is too likely too late.
Thuso Kumalo sent in that report. Now, as we always do, we posted this on our Facebook page and many more comments came through, Zipora, starting with Jolly Inyan from Cameroon saying, the UN should pay their African staff the same paycheck as EU and US staff. They should also put in place proper governance and enforced internal controls against corruption.
And Mota Isaac says, Africa needs transformation. How can you demand bribes from someone who lives through assistance? Thank you very much for your comments and feedback. You can continue talking to us there on our Facebook page, DW Africa. We now go on to other news that are making international headlines. Iran says it is ready for war after shooting down a U.S. spy drone. Tehran said Washington had crossed a red line by sending the drone to Iranian airspace.
The U.S. had denounced it, saying it was an unprovoked attack and that they were operating in international airspace. This comes at a time of heightened tension between the two countries. DW's Lisa Ellis has more.
The shooting down of the U.S. drone was announced on Iranian state television. The commander of Iran's elite Revolutionary Guard said they had destroyed the drone because they wanted to send a strong message to the U.S.
Those who defend the border of the Islamic nation of Iran will react in a total and decisive way to any intrusion by foreign elements on our land.
However, the incident comes at a time of increasing tension between Tehran and Washington. At its heart, the international nuclear deal, which the U.S. withdrew from last year. This week, Iran said it was also no longer willing to abide by the terms of the agreement and could soon restart its nuclear activity. The United States has also said it has no interest in fueling the dispute with Iran. But the fear is a military confrontation could happen not by design, but by accident.
Lisa Ellis with that report.
And now we head to Uganda, which has been touted as one of the world's leading examples when it comes to their refugee policy. The country is the largest refugee-hosting nation in Africa and the third largest in the world. But Uganda is struggling to handle the large inflow of refugees.
The accommodation of over 1 million refugees is having a strain on the country's finances, infrastructure and resources, especially while some funds are being mismanaged. Refugees are planning a demonstration to demand more from the government to tackle the growing crisis. I earlier spoke to our correspondent Alexita in Kampala, Uganda, about this issue. I first asked him why refugees were going on demonstration.
Well, for some time now, refugees have been complaining that the living conditions, their refugee settlements are getting worse. And they're also not convinced that there isn't any money actually to change this, because they heard, and it's true, that some of the officials in the office of the Prime Minister misused some of the money meant for refugee programs. Mr. Misikami is the executive director of an organization called Foundation People for Peace and Human Rights.
We want to demonstrate because we are looking at the police as being highly used by people in power in order to oppress vocal refugees who can speak on behalf of the others. But also we want to demonstrate because the situation of the refugees in general is becoming worse.
What exactly do they want from the government now?
There was an investigation into funds that were stolen, as we mentioned earlier, and the investigation started very early in 2018. Almost 16 months later, the Ugandan government says they are still investigating. And this is the reason why the governments of Germany and the United Kingdom chose to hold back some of the funds they were sending for refugee programs here. So these refugees are saying that this investigation should be, the results should be revealed and the officials involved punished, so that refugee funds start coming in from the donors, which caused a very big funding gap.
So what role does the UNHCR play in all of this?
Well, the UNHCR is another implementing body. It also gets funds from donors to meet specific refugee needs, which they seem to be doing. But since the Ugandan government has a funds problem, some of their funds have been diverted to cover the areas that the Ugandan government should be covering. So I spoke to the UNHCR representative in Uganda, Mr. Joel Buturu.
That the situation is very far from where it should be, because we have acute scarcity of funds, so we cannot provide what the refugees are entitled to, which is access to education, water, access to health, which is not great. Access to education is a real problem. Aspect of protection is not where it should be. Also, we need counseling and so on. These aspects need to be improved. We're trying. We're appealing for more funds.
What can we say is actually working regarding Uganda's approach to refugees in the country?
The Ugandan government continues to accept more refugees from the Democratic Republic of Congo, from South Sudan, and sometimes Rwanda and Burundi, despite this funding gap. And these refugees are allocated land to settle, at least in the meantime. Some refugee camps have government-aided schools. Amidst discussed, some of these schools are still running, and few services like water, some food, they are being offered, although not to the satisfaction of all the refugees.
Alex Jita with that report. Deborah, what's the situation like in Kenya?
Well, we have two of the largest refugee camps, Kakuma and Dadaab. But what I love, Eddie, is that the young people there come out and make something out of their life. It is not the end.
Very important point.
You are listening to DW's Africa Link, coming to you live from our studios in Bonn, Germany. My name is Zipporah Nyambura.
And I am Eddie Micah Jr. Thanks for all your comments and feedback on these stories we're covering on Facebook. I see a lot more tuning in, mostly good comments, Zipporah. Mostly people enjoying what we're doing and definitely still tuned in.
Yeah, keep it here because we still have a lot to come. For example, the plight facing refugees who have lived for years as refugee or in refugee camps in South Sudan.
Life and Protection Site is not helpful. It is the UN that's helping us. We are surviving on the cereals given to us by the UN. Sometimes we go and pluck wild fruits. That's what helps us.
The details of that and more will be coming up soon on the show, so stay with us.
Yes, sure, Eddie. But first, to another big story. The World Football Governing Body, FIFA, has today announced a drastic overhaul of African football in the wake of corruption scandals rocking the Confederation of African Football, CAF.
FIFA General Secretary Fatma Samoura will now take over the running of football for a period of 6 months with the aim of cleaning up African soccer. As Mike Luti reports, these scandals are not dampening the spirit of soccer fans who are looking forward to the big kickoff of the Africa Cup of Nations on Friday.
Scandals in African football is nothing new. However, last week's brief detention of Ahmed Ahmed, the man in charge of African football in France, has rubbed FIFA the wrong way. Ahmed was briefly detained by French police for questioning on corruption allegations. FIFA hopes, by appointing Secretary General Fatma Samoura to an additional role cleaning up African soccer, will bring transparency. The first task will be to carry out an urgent audit of finances and oversee management of African football. It was the same scandal that saw Cameroon lose the rights to host the African Cup of Nations football tournament. Funds that were supposed to be used for building stadiums were diverged and misappropriated. But that has not dampened the spirit of soccer fans across the continent, who were looking forward to nearly a month of football extravaganza. For the first time, the African Cup will feature 24 teams, up from 16, which is expected to give other countries a chance to participate in the tournament. But not all people think it's a wise idea, including Tunisian football expert Zubaya Baya, a former player who now works as an analyst for Abu Dhabi Sports.
In this championship that begins in June, most of the players in the Africa Cup of Nations have already completed 40 matches this season. For those playing in Europe, it's even more than 50. And now they have to prepare to go again. That doesn't just take its toll on the body, but the psyche too. These are just ordinary people.
Despite failing to host the championship, Cameroon's indomitable Lions are determined to retain the trophy. Retired Cameroonian striker Patrick Mboma says they should not be underrated.
A national coach might even think, even if we are not favorites, we could still make it. Even though there are always two strong teams in each group, one must not forget that everything is possible in football. Some small teams are also very determined.
It is the first time the competition will be held in June and not in January. Critics have raised concerns that temperatures may go in excess of 30 degrees Celsius, posing serious challenges to competing teams. For many people, the principal charm of the African Cup of Nations is its utter unpredictability. 2 years ago, Cameroon came into the competition with one of its weakest-looking squads in living memory and came out of it as champions. This year, three other countries are being treated as heavy hitters, that is hosts, Egypt, Senegal, and Morocco. Zubaya Baya again.
In
Africa, one must not forget that the hosts are always the favorite. That is typical in African football competitions. Egypt has one key player, Mo Salah. He is at the peak of his career, and all of Egypt is counting on him.
With drums rolling to the big kickoff between Egypt and Zimbabwe, everyone is looking forward for the games to begin. They hope the action will finally confine the scandals to the background and allow African football to show off one of the things it has to offer, a wealth of top-quality talent.
Michael Oti had that report. And Zipporah, you and I were talking about this some time ago, and comments are coming in based on what we even talked about. Francis Ingwa says preparations for the European Cup will be problematic. Recently, Michel Platini was arrested. Need I go further? Africa is not the only struggling football continent, he ends with.
And he has someone who actually agrees with him. That is Kenneth McKay, who says FIFA should take over the European football governing body, UEFA and CONCACAF, as these organizations are also corrupt. Why is it that we Africans are always made to feel incapable and always have to have a custodian to look after us? A very interesting comment there.
Definitely. Many more comments coming out like that.
U-Zone.
Now, today on U-Zone, we're talking about digitalization. In Africa, it's been off to a flying start for the last 10 years. Digital innovation is creating opportunities for Africa to grow its economy, create jobs, and change people's lives. However, the World Bank still believes it's moving at a snail's pace because only 24% of the people in Africa have internet connection. Nadia Owusu is a digital marketer from Ghana. She says there are many factors behind these.
Everything that comes into Africa, people are ready to fight against it and adopt it. But it will take some time for people to actually understand what they are trying to do, adapt it, and maybe head on to it. So it will take some time. Women are not open to internet. Women are not getting the full potential of the internet and digitalization. Most people that are not benefiting from social media, the internet, World Wide Web, is because of all these climaxes. It's because of all these pauses. Because they don't have internet, they don't have electricity, they don't have smartphones, they don't even have education enough. So I think it's more of everyone stepping in to do their jobs, NGOs, civil societies, individuals, private sectors, the government. It's a collective effort.
Nadia Owusu is a digital marketer from Ghana. Now, although video games developers like William Tuwiya believe we should fast-track digitalization, some stakeholders like human rights expert Wilberforce Asare and tech analyst Maximus Ametego says its effects on the young people and economy should not be ignored. Listen to this debate.
So some of us are first movers in the gaming space, and we've been doing this, and we believe that game development is in line with the robotics, is in line, like they are all new media, new digital spaces that we believe is the only industry that will catapult Africa to be at par with the West.
You see, that's the challenge we have, you know. So if you have been doing e-commerce, for example, what product are you selling? Are they locally manufactured products, or you are just building shelves for Chinese products or American products in Ghana, right? So if you don't build an industrialization base where you manufacture local products, e-commerce is going to drive somebody else's industry because they are going to sell their products in your country. You need to have local industries, you know, functioning and producing dresses, shoes, bags, cars, and all that we need so that when you put the virtual market on it, then the e-commerce can be profitable to us than the digital colonial.
Marching on with the victories that technology are going to bring to Africa, is embedded in it the need to make sure that we secure the borders of the lives of our children, because they need to grow up and come and take over these technologies that we are creating now. If they do not grow up properly to come and take it over from us and probably even develop it further than we have, then all the efforts that all these technology giants put in has come to naught. Or for that matter, the technology giants need to put in place adequate measures to ensure that children are protected so they can grow up and inherit the technologies that they are developing. So my argument is that whilst you are introducing the technology, sit back and make sure that you are introducing policy to protect children, to protect the next generation.
That's an excerpt from our 77% debate on digitalization in Africa this week. Among them are tech analyst Maximus Ametogo and human rights expert Wilberforce Asare.
And of course, Eddie, you are from Ghana and they're from Ghana. Mm-hmm. How do you feel digitalization is working in Ghana, for example?
It is definitely spreading. I mean, I think Kenya even has the best example. It's not even a new example. We're talking about money transfer system that you guys created, and you're definitely a good example to the rest of the world. I mean, we are in this day and age where digitalization is the way forward. So we have to embrace it. No choice.
For sure. And we are also interested on hearing what you think. If you're listening to us on our Facebook page there, just drop us some comments. And for more, go on to our YouTube channel at youtube.com/DW Africa.
Speaking out.
As we look into the plight facing refugees today on the World Refugees Day, we now head to South Sudan, where millions of people have been rendered homeless by years of conflict. The country plunged into civil war in 2013 after President Salva Kiir accused his longtime rival and former Vice President Riek Machar of plotting a coup against him.
Food shortage in the refugee camp is rampant due to insecurity, which has hampered delivery of food aid in some areas. Thousands of children are diagnosed as malnourished, and parents have been forced to watch their children starve. Our correspondent Wake Simon Wudu visited a refugee camp, which people have called home for the last 5 years.
I am at a UN refugee camp in Malakal, one of the towns in northern part of South Sudan, which has been hit hard by 5 years of conflict. Thousands of internally displaced persons have queued to receive food aid from the World Food Program. I meet 30-year-old Regina Monbun, who is a mother of five. She is dressed in her traditional Lawa dress as she clutches onto her 4-year-old child. Her child is suffering from malnutrition, and that is why she has brought her to a nutrition center to get high food values.
The situation that we are in has made us vulnerable. Children are unable to feed on the right food. A child is supposed to eat the right food so that he remains healthy. If you don't have money to buy him some food like meat, fish, and other nice foods such as Irish potatoes, his health cannot be good.
Monbun fled her village in Melut due to insecurity caused by fighting between government and opposition forces. She is one of the 30,000 internally displaced persons who have taken refuge at the UN Protection of Civilian Center. She says life here is difficult. She cannot go out to cultivate or even get a job to feed her children.
Life and protection side is not helpful. It is the UN that's helping us. We are surviving on the cereals given to us by the UN. Sometimes we go and pluck wild fruits. That's what helps us. The UN only brings for us food aid such as sorghum, maize flour, cereal, and cooking oil. These are the things we have been eating since 2013, when I escaped the conflict from my village.
In the same situation is the Regina Peter Ball, a mother of eight, who has been depending on UN food aid for the last 5 years. She says the only thing she can do to earn some little money to supplement a few family basic things is selling tea.
But even selling the tea sometimes does not earn me money because there is no market for it. Sometimes, if you have a relative who works with the UN or someone who can assist you, then you are lucky. But no one can help you every day. For example, if he or she gives you today and tomorrow, then it's not the case the next day. You can only continue to gamble with life.
According to the UN, more than two-thirds of the world's refugees come from five countries, two of them from Africa, South Sudan, and Somalia.
Thank you very much, Simon Udu, reporting there from South Sudan. And of course, Eddie, we have lots of responses there and people listening to us on our Facebook page, DW Africa.
Well, Onyewa Moses says, God be with us in Africa and the freedom of all freedom fighters in Africa and other parts of Africa. So it's a lot of positive vibes we're getting today on our Facebook page. Also, someone is asking, are you going to live stream Africa Cup? What's the response, Ipura?
Unfortunately, we will not, but we will keep you updated. Keep looking out on our page, dw.com, and on our Facebook page, because we'll have a lot lined up for you. We also have someone here, Eddie, who is saying, hello, DW, and he's listening all the way from Ghana.
Many thanks for all of you that tuned in. That's all time will allow us. I am Eddie Micah Jr.
And I'm Zipporah Nyambura. Bye for now.
DW. Made for Minds.